I gave a talk here on pretty much a similar topic. This was a more philosophically orientated talk on complementarity versus uncertainty principles. And that talk contained only almost no formulas. And I saw people fall asleep. I might have done just the opposite to send you asleep today with too many formulas. In any case, what I'm trying to do is quite different from last time round. I might say what I talked about last time is meanwhile available in written form. It's work with my student Chris Philippi. And that is a paper on complementarity and uncertainty in Mach-Zehnder interferometry and beyond, which follows up the question that has been raised in long debate in the 1990s as to whether the uncertainty principle is obsolete in view of entanglement and all that, and complementarity is so much more fundamental, etc. So we are going against that in this paper, and I believe put forth some hard arguments there to sort of re-establish the balance. What I'm going to talk about today, I'm just using not very good slides, but more or less just the rough draft manuscript that I'm working on presently. But this goes back pretty much is based pretty much on a review paper that also has been in draft form put on the archive for comment, please. And this is with my Finnish friends, Pekka Lahti, who was here a couple of months ago, and his former student, Keiko Heinonen. In this paper, we give a review of the three, as we call it, the three phases of the uncertainty principle, as there are the standard one that everybody knows, which is a characterization of preparations, state preparations, and is formulated in terms, for instance, of standard deviations of position and momentum observables in the state. But that's only one aspect of the uncertainty principle. There are one or two more which are to do with measurement. There's the question of why is it impossible, or is it, to do joint measurements? And that's where an uncertainty relation comes into place for inaccuracies of those joint measurements. And that is what I'm going to talk about here, mostly. And there is one further uncertainty relation that was also intuitively spelled out in Heisenberg's original paper, that is to do with one measurement disturbing the distribution of other non-commuting observables, such as momentum. And Heisenberg initially understood his uncertainty relations very much in that sense, although the formalization that he gave was in this sense. So there has been a lot of confused debate going on over the decades. And this is a good time to talk about it, because this is the eve before the 80th birthday of both principles. So I'm pleased to announce that, not quite, unfortunately, just based on our work, but from the work of many people, as a matter of fact, a great deal of clarification has been reached as to precisely formulating all three variants of uncertainty principle. So the other two beyond the state preparation uncertainty relation have been given very precise formulations and proofs, as well as it's become clear how these three, formally at least, in the quantum formalism, are pretty much interlinked with each other, and that's what I will hopefully conclude with today, to explain that to you. So there is this review paper, and that gave rise to the considerations that I've put down here, which is yet another form of joint measurement uncertainty relation. And that I want to explain the ideas around this. So there is basically the sequence of points I have to go through. Just made my introduction. I'll first say a little bit about covariant phase space observables. And then I look at various measures of, well, measures of measurement error, which are understood intuitively as degrees of how far an observable actually being measured by a measurement scheme differs from the observable that I would like to get to know about. So what we are talking about in approximate measurements generically is wanting to measure one observable, let's say E. Observables always are positive operator measures here, and actually measuring something else, perhaps. Of course, yeah, there is inaccuracy or what have you. So the general theme behind defining suitable measures of measurement inaccuracy is that of comparing PAVMs, finding measures of distance or distinctness between those. And here I'll run through briefly three different proposals and discuss the resulting uncertainty relations that go with them. So these are understood also to be case studies for the case of position and momentum in particular here. But they might open up quite a playground to further explorations at your leisure. So I decided to leave all that funny framing in, because then we get a bigger projection, but now I have to find out how to scroll best to get to my, yeah, here we are. So I'll only look at a particle with 1 degree of freedom, moving in one spatial dimension, spinless and all that, and I introduce in that then the usual position and momentum operators, Q and P. The spectral measures are denoted with this, almost the same letters in a different font. And what I'm also going to need is phase space translations or their representations as unitary operators, the while operators. Now my terminology is such that state operators are positive operators row of trace 1, so I call them states. Set of states is S. Observables are normalized, positive operator measures here. What else do we need? Mostly on these measurable spaces, either the real line or phase space. Well, sometimes I write the probability measures as rho superscript rho for the state superscript E, and that is then, for instance, rho superscript Q means the position distribution or position probability measure associated with the state rho. What we also shall see along the way is the moment operators for a given operator measure. They are defined in the obvious way, and that's the notation for them, E of K. So, the first example of a phase space observable, long before the notion of positive operator measure was known in physics at least, came from Husimi in 1939, who discovered or noticed that this map here defines a perfectly well-defined positive phase space distribution of the proper quantum mechanical form, namely the expectation in state phi of some operator. And here's how this gives rise to a phase space POVM. And that was the first example after the shocking discovery of Wigner in 1932 that position and momentum do not have any well-behaved joint distributions. Wigner required the marginal distributions to be the ordinary position and momentum distributions for each state, and showed what the unique thing that you get as a joint is the Wigner function, which isn't positive definite. Husimi found this stuff here, which is positive definite, but if you look at the marginals, they are rather, as it turns out, convolutions of the ordinary position and momentum distributions with fixed reference or confidence measures. So there are smearings of position and momentum distributions. So that's the price that one pays for achieving positivity and for achieving a POVM which properly represents a measurement on phase space. So this he is quickly seen to generalize, well, more or less fully to this form here. M, little m, is an operator, well, an operator that generates this density, an operator density in the integral. M is shifted around by applying phase space translations in the obvious way here. And then this object, this is a positive operator for each subset in phase space, essentially. So one important result with this is rather recent, actually. The phase space observable that I just showed you is not just an example, but actually, let me see it is. Here. This is actually the generic form. There is nothing else beyond this that has the property of covariance. So covariance means this property here. Tor, QP, is the map that sends the set Z to its QP shifted counterpart. And then that is the covariance, the definition of covariance of an observable. And the phase space observable as defined above has this property. And conversely, any phase space shift covariant P of M, which is normalized, has exactly the form given there. And that's actually rather recent, and because it's important, people have used different methods of proving it. There's the machinery of Mackey of induced representations that's been done in 2004 by Cassinelli and co-workers. Lahti and colleagues have used the theory of integration with respect to operator measures to get an alternative proof. And we were told by Reinhard Werner that he proved this all in 1984 in his big paper on quantum harmonic analysis on phase space. But none of us could understand the proof there or even recognize the statement, so it's pretty hidden there if it's there. So it's one of Reinhard's wild statements. But for the rest of it, I'm not slugging off Reinhard, but rather closely following, in what comes, closely following some of his recent ingenious ideas on the subject. So watch out.
Can you go through once again, just something I missed, but what's the intuition behind covariance?
Well, to go a couple of steps back, one way of characterizing what is position is what kind of measurement measures position. You could do that in terms of using covariance under space translations to begin with, which means that if I have a device that measures position at time zero here, then if I shift that device there, it still measures position, but now at time zero there. So that's covariance, and this symmetry property, which we all believe to be essentially satisfied with our measurements, makes covariance such a fundamental property, and it's in fact the defining property for our position observables. If you add as well that it's invariant under boosts, then you can derive uniquely, if it's a sharp observable, that position has to be described by such and such spectral measure as you know it, which is tightly related to the shift generator, which is the momentum operator. So you get your canonical commutation relations out of that. And if you look at phase space, then you would look at position and momentum shifts and require covariance.
When you say boost, do you mean Galilean boost?
Yes, this is all Galilean quantum mechanics. Yeah.
And so can you now explain again the equation 6? So W was the...
That's the unitary representation of phase-based translations. So you take your localization operator and transform it, and that is the same as taking the old localization operator, but take it on a different set, on the corresponding transformed set. So these two things, you can visualize that. I should have shown that as a commutative diagram, and that explains exactly what's going on physically.
This is covariance in Q and P.
Yes, yeah. And that's what one would require typically of a good joint measurement of position and momentum.
What would be an observable that's not covariant? Like six looks to me like it ought to be satisfied by just both by any observable that
well, take a position and apply some scaling function on it that sort of changes the position. Then you spoil the covariance. So take a function of position, an unbounded function of position, then you essentially get something like position, but it's sort of, it's no longer covariant in general.
Go on.
Well, one can, of course, go more general, and I'm going to do that in a moment, in that you could allow yourself to consider joint measurements or joint measurements, approximate measurements, which do not share that covariance property. So that's of interest, that's where we are headed. But just to sum up the properties of these covariant observables, they have this operator generating density. This notation here with this pi, I could have explained that somewhere. Pi is the parity transformation, and going from here to compute the marginals, the marginal measures, the Cartesian marginal measures, you find that to get this convolution form of the spectral measure with this you have to introduce an inversion of variables to write it as a convolution. So this is just a small thing. Take the standard deviation of this m, considered as a state in Q, and that would give a reasonable definition of inaccuracy in the marginals. It shows an intrinsic spread that is added to the distributions of sharp position and sharp momentum. That's how one should read this intuitively. And then because these are just standard deviations in a common state, you have the usual uncertainty relation to get one here for these intrinsic measurement inaccuracies. So for phase space observables in that sense here, as covariant QVMs, we immediately have a nice measurement inaccuracy uncertainty relation. But it's very much based on a measure of standard deviations, and people have been interested to go a bit away from that.
In the Hilbert space case, when you try to, in the Galilean case, you don't get a real representation, you get a projected representation. And here, you don't seem to have that ambiguity.
The W's are a projective representation. In fact, if I write the composition law, you'll get your phase factor. Yeah.
So it's implicit in that.
Yes. Location. Yeah. But I wanted to skip the details. Yeah. Well, it's studied. That's not really new.
Can I ask another? I think you said this on some form, but. Unclear exactly what is the definition of a phase space observable. Does it mean something that's associated by some rule with a non-negative function on phase space?
Well, that's what this is, space? Yes. Yeah.
But is that?
Yeah. If you take the expectation of these operators G here, if you take the expectation of that against the state rho, then you have a positive distribution function on phase space, which adds up to 1 for each quantum state row. So this is really the proper full sense of a quantum observable which gives positive probabilities on phase space. But if you wonder about the joint measurability, then the answer is yes, it's like Heisenberg said. For the inaccuracies of in that measurement, inaccuracies for estimating position and estimating momentum, you get an additional spread, which is given by, which is intrinsic to this POVM.
So in 6, what is G of Z? What is Z?
Well, Z is a subset of phase space.
Z is a subset.
Yeah.
So that's a projection.
So for each interval in phase space, you write a positive operator whose expectation value gives you the probability of finding your particle in a measurement in that region, given the state rho.
So that's what you mean by phase space observable.
Yeah.
Something that attaches a positive operator. Yeah. To every subset of phase space.
Yeah.
In such a way as to be the measure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Let me try to get over this page now. Yeah. One way of an alternative way of characterizing the inaccuracies is by looking at the confidence distributions given by that state M. Well, I shouldn't call it a state, it's a state operator, and it has the property of a state, but here it's defining an observer. It's a generating a density from an observer. But just let me be sloppy and call it a state M. The width of the position distribution in that state M describes the inaccuracy of the position measurement achieved by that phase space observer. Likewise for momentum. And rather than taking standard deviations as they are here, they are often not the best measures of width or uncertainty. One can take what is known as the overall width of a distribution. Here, P is a probability distribution on the real line. Take the smallest interval size that you can get by going along the distribution with a fixed interval size, so that your probability is at least 1 minus epsilon. Take the smallest such interval, and that's what we call the overall width of the distribution. And again, then, mathematicians have shown that for our phase space generating state, the overall width satisfies an uncertainty relation of the Heisenberg form. It's not a very tight lower bound here, because we expect if epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 are very small, if the probabilities of localizing position in an interval in phase space and momentum in an interval is high, if that probability is high, you would expect that your phase space region has to be pretty large. That's not quite reflected here, but the essential point is there is certainly state independent, but also there is a lower bound which only depends on the levels of confidence that you want in your measurement, and not on the specifics of the measurement itself. So this is a universal form of uncertainty relation for covariant observables, covariant phase space observables, and the joint the position momentum measurements achieved by them. Well, there is a notion of intrinsic resolution of a POVM on the real line that looks rather similar to that, and in fact it turns out to give rise to those overall width measures for phase space observables. Resolution is the smallest interval size, again, for which the distribution is greater than 1 minus epsilon, but now for all x in R. And then you can turn the handle and show that resolution is a good way of characterizing the error bars in those measurements. So that's for the operational interpretation of this thing. Now, there's a classic and rather classically inspired approach to characterizing in general the error, let's say, of any measurement on the real line that is aiming at measuring position, which is more generally applicable than what I just showed you for phase space observers. So we step back here and look at various approaches, and one of them is what I call classical error measures. Well, this has been used quite widely, for instance, in the quantum optics literature. It's basically, if I first put here, that's Q, I want to measure position. What I put in first is the pointer observable of the device that I'm using. And then I take the average of the root mean square deviation between these operators. That would look like a natural way of going about defining errors in general, at least. has been thought so for a while. We have become a little critical of that, but it looks very natural. And in classical physics, this is perfectly okay. I'll show you in a moment what maybe is wrong with it. If you write this thing in terms of the measured observable that comes here, so you go back to the language of the object alone rather than involving the level of measurements, instruments, and all that, then by way of comparing the measurement statistics with probability distributions in your object's Hilbert space, you find a unique POVM, as you probably all know, at least the quantum foundations and quantum information people are quite aware of that. You find a POVM in your object's system that describes the measured observable, and you can still look then in that setting on how that observable differs from position. And then this quantity turns into what I've written up here. now I call A the observable to be measured that I want to estimate by measuring, actually applying a device which is described by this POVM E. So what this boils down to then is that the square of the error of the deviation is given by these two terms, which each are positive. This here is the intrinsic unsharpness of E. This term vanishes for all rho exactly when E is the sharp observable, a spectral measure. And this here has the comparison in it between the first moment of E and the observable we want to measure. And you take that square. So there are these two terms.
The square bracket, so this means the order of the moment?
Yes, yeah, yeah. This is the second moment, that's the first moment, right. Here is something I call the requirement of operational significance. The requirement that the measure can be determined by the measurement statistics of the observables to be compared. So any measure of error, one might be inclined to think, should be the characteristic of the distribution of E and the distribution of A. That's what we do in calibration. If we build a new device, at least in an idealized way, that's what we do. If we build a new device to test what it does, how good it is, we throw in some well-defined states that we have to know from some other measurement, from another device that we know already very well. So that's basically calibration. And in principle, that's what one would wish to see. But this is our main criticism with this kind of definition, because here this fails. The first term contains A, which is the observable to be measured, and the first moment of E. A priori, E can be anything. And the people who propose it and have discussed it recently and propagated, they think in these terms that any measurement is good to give some information about anything else. That's the reasoning behind it. But anyway, if you look at this quantity, it has the square of this difference operator, where in general A and E1 may not commute. So certainly the square of this operator needs, in order to determine the expectation, one needs to do a measurement that has nothing to do with the measurement we are considering, the measurement of E, or the measurement of A. These two separate measurements do not help us to determine the expectations of an operator that doesn't commute with either of them. So there's a problem here. And a similar problem is here, because there is the square of the first moment. There's nothing in the statistics of E that would give us a guarantee that we get a good estimate of the square, of the expectation of the square of E1. So mathematically, this looks quite nice, but whether it's experimentally significant is a bit doubtful. Nevertheless, what people like, well, I guess there's a long list actually, Ewan, Raymer, Marcus Appleby, Ozawa, Mike Hall, they all have worked with things like that and analyzed that quite in detail. And what they found is that for positional momentum and uncertainty in relation of this form. There's what we would like to estimate, the product of the errors for, well, one step back, M1, M2 are modules of some observable M defined on phase space. I don't require covariance here. I want more generality going along with these people. Then I have these error measures, and I would like to see whether there is a lower bound for that. And they say, no, that's the full relation, the best one can achieve to begin with. And this involves properties of the preparation, so this is a state dependent from the beginning anyway. And in any case, there is a relation here, sort of trade relation, but it's not the universal type of Heisenberg uncertainty relation. But if you go to a case where the classical errors are actually operationally significant in the sense discussed, that is happening actually where the measurements are unbiased, which basically means that the first moments of my marginal measures coincide with the position and momentum, and I can also allow some constant shifts here if I like. In that case, under these conditions alone, they have shown that a stronger result comes out, which is again a canonical Heisenberg uncertainty relation. So it's a curious situation. Where this measure is operationally significant, it seems we have a good uncertainty relation. Where it is not, well, let's see. Where it's not, funny things may happen. I'll come to that in a moment. These classical error measures can be computed for covariant phase space observable G, and they are just then such that this unbiasedness condition holds in this form, or there's a constant bias, as it were, of the averages. And then the error measures just boil down again to the variances as we had it, and we have the same uncertainty relation as we had for covariance. Observed already. Now, here's a cute example. I'm never coming to the end anyway, so I go at my leisure and then wrap it up very quickly. It's very straightforward, actually, to come up with a phase space observable, which certainly isn't covariant, and actually quite bad as a joint measurement, because I require its first marginal just to be position, sharp position. Then, in general, what the second marginal is, that's following from some well-known theories. The second marginal, and actually the whole observable M, must be commutative, and the second marginal in particular is a function of position. So, here you go. There are models, for example, where I could give you the instrument, but I didn't prepare that. You first measure position sharply, and follow this by a sharp momentum measurement, as it were. And you interpret that in terms of the input state. That gives you a phase-based observable. Certainly not a covariant one, and certainly a bad one, because in some examples, what happens to the momentum measurement is that it gives you no information at all. It's a trivial observable. The margin that comes out is trivial in the sense that it's a multiple of the identity. M2 is the identity times a constant measure. So that confirms this bold idea of Heisenberg. If you measure position first sharply, then you can measure momentum afterwards, but that tells you nothing about the momentum prior to the position measurement. All that is erased, all that information is never accessible. And what our theorems, for instance, of Davies say is that this momentum measurement actually only gives you a shadow of the information of the position measurement that you already have. Its effects, the M1, the M2 effects, there are functions of positions. There's nothing new in it. Or more general, and in the extreme case you have this sort of behavior. So in that case, in fact, you see you get the classical error for the position 0, and the classical error for the momentum has this curious form here. There is actually the variance of momentum in the state rho, plus the difference between the expectations of rho and mu squared, plus the variance of mu. So this one would think has to do with the error of the measurement. This here with the biasness or unbiasness. But one would actually think that what we define as error is the surplus width of the measurement statistics over the width of the statistics that we would like to see. So one wonders, what is this term doing here? So in that trivial example, I think it becomes apparent that something is fishy with this classical definition already in this most trivial case. This M2 of that form could be really called or regarded as the worst possible approximate measurement of momentum because it gives you no information about momentum. But this measure of error, as it were, as it is called, suggests to you, well, it's finite, that your inference should give you some security. But think of a situation where you work with this measurement and you throw in sharply peaked momentum distributions at various peak locations. You get no information whatsoever what the peak was, or because the distribution that you get is always the same, irrespective of where the peak was. That's what this measurement is. And it seems that this finite error measure is quite misleading in that it doesn't indicate that you learn nothing. So that's a bit of a criticism on that. Ignore the rest of this discussion.
Could you give an example of such an observable that has this property you're talking about?
Property of?
But I just didn't, or maybe it was the time, I might be lost. The first marginal was Q, and the second marginal was...
Yeah, well, formally, what you do is you take... Q of x is a spectrumonic measure of position. Mu of y is just a fixed probability measure. And as I said, we know from Ozawa's work, we know at least one example of an instrument, phase-based instrument, as it were, which is constructed by first measuring position sharply and then measuring momentum. And that gives rise to exactly that form of joint probability. Then if you take R here, then what you get is just the mu of R times the identity, mu of Y times the identity. If you take R here, then you get your position observable, all of that, and this is one. So these are the marginals.
Here X is a subset of the real line, the position line, and Y is a subset of the momentum.
Yeah. And in that measurement model, this is actually what you do. You try hard. First measure position as good as you can, then you measure momentum as good as you can, and you try to see what you learn from the momentum measurement about your input state, and this is telling you what it is, nothing. Trace rho m of r cross y, that should be the momentum probability, and that's just mu of y, there's nothing about rho here.
Mu is the Lebesgue measure?
No, mu is just a probability measure. Any fixed probability.
Any fixed probability.
Yeah. So, it must have come as a surprise to people who construct instruments on paper that you can do that sequence of measurements, first position, then momentum, and you get this sort of object out of it as the description of the statistics. But that looks trivial, but it comes out of a highly non-trivial attempt, as it were, construction. So something is fishy with this measuring quantum mechanics, and therefore it's certainly, well, at least as long as you use it not with appropriate discretion. We have seen that in some circumstances it's operationally well defined, and in those cases you get a sensible uncertainty relation out of it. Yeah, but that case here is not in that class. So let's try something else then, and that is where Werner comes in. He gave recently, 2004, a new definition of a metric, of a distance function. between two observables on the real line. That's what I call here the Wellner distance. And that's the definition. It's a lot of suprema business going on here, so it's a bit difficult to read. So I gave the general definition that's here. I have E and F. I have H, a function on the real line from a certain class. I'll talk about that in a moment. I take the expectations of E of H and F of H in state rho, and then I try how large can this difference be, the worst case scenario, across all possible states rho and all possible functions H that I'm allowing in that set, the lambda, which would be a capital lambda. Let's look at this quickly. Lambda is the set of all functions which are bounded and have this, as it is called, Lipschitz condition between them. So they don't change more rapidly than the function f of x is x. That's what this essentially means. And again, here is E of h defined to be the integral of h over the measure E. So that's sort of the average of h of x in the measure E. So here are some alternative ways of writing this. This is useful for technical applications to compute the measure. And this here explains where it comes from. This is taking the supremum in different orders. So implicitly, D of rho E, rho F is, well, these are the distributions, rho E and rho F, or the measures, as it were. And this is the distance defined as the supremum overall lambda of this quantity. And then we do the rho supremum. This is a distance as it stands between probability measures. And that's known as the Monger metric. After a mathematician in the, I don't know, 17th or 18th century, who was given the task of optimizing the price, minimizing the price that it takes to take one heap of soil and transport it by a certain distance and turn it into another heap of soil. And you can think about that, and there's a very natural definition that you come up with. If the initial distribution is mu1, the final is mu2, then you would look at the distance squared and take the average of that. So that's the square of the Monger metric. Yep. It's a rather natural thing to do, and that's what comes in here with the Wellner's approach, and that's what
you propose. So mu1 is at x, and then mu2 is at y.
Yeah, I should write it in this form, you're right. So mu of dx, mu1 of dx, mu2 of dy. That's what goes into that definition and explains why it's also quite natural. And it gives a measure of, for instance, the difference between position and an approximate position, which takes into account the position scale. So what Wellner actually proves then is, for any observable on phase space with marginals m1 and 2, which are supposed to approximate position and momentum, you can say that the distance of m1 from q and m2 from p cannot both be arbitrarily small in this sense. So if one approximation is pretty good, the other one has to be pretty bad. So I would say that's a very beautiful approximation to a very beautiful geometric expression of the approximation of observables by other observables, or the separation or differences between observables. I doubt rather that it's very useful or practical and natural in terms of what an experimentalist thinks of characterizing measurement errors. So it's beautiful geometrically. It's even, well, what I called operationally significant. All that matters to compute it or estimate it is the distributions of E and F. So it's good in that respect. But there are two reservations that I have. One is that it doesn't really reflect in a natural way, on, in an obvious way, experimental errors. And it also seems to be giving us rather coarse estimates at times. So we have computed some examples with that. Let me see how far we get into that. Well, one trivial remark is, let's not go over the proofs here, but one trivial remark is that the trivial observables, those here, multiples of the identity, they actually do have infinite Larner distance from sharp momentum. Same is true in the next example. I take a more general case, a phase space observable whose first marginal is sharp positioned, and then in general, whatever the second marginal is, whether it's that sort of trivial observable or not, it'll be a function of position, and it has, we have shown that then it has a, an infinite Werner distance again from sharp momentum. So that covers the extreme case. If you try to measure position sharply, then there's no information whatsoever in terms of this measure about momentum, because the distance of that marginal is infinite. So that's reassuring with it. That's how it should come out.
Can we go back to that Monge measure and Longer measure?
Yeah.
I'm missing something obvious. It seems to me that the distance of some mu 1 to mu 1 would be non-zero. On the black, it's x minus 9 squared mu, dx, mu 1 dx mu 2 mu 1.
No, I haven't thought about that.
I mean, suppose,
sure.
I mean, unless mu is 1 and is a delta function. It looks like your product, mu1 dx mu2 dy, I mean, that'll be some distribution on
that's right, yeah.
xy plane, and x minus y squared is a non-zero expression in general. So how is it a distance?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question. What was the question?
Suppose we take mu1 equals mu2. It looks like that's supposed to give the distance between mu1 and mu2, right? Which you would expect to be zero unless it's a pseudometric or something. Maybe it's a pseudometric. It looks like the distance of mu1 mu2 is not zero when mu1 equals mu2.
Yeah. I might be missing a step here in the definition. This was a certainly a preliminary formula which I just read out by heart. That should be correct. We have a positive integrand here if we just see it out. What do we have? X squared minus 2xy plus y squared. So if you take the average of that over mu1, mu2, you get the average, you get x squared, y squared, and you get the average of x and y. You have to have a sharp one for that to be zero. Yes. That's correct. So this is not yet the Monge thing. I'm missing some point here that I can't remember right now. So I guess I have to recap that. There's a step missing there. I can't fill that in right now. I have to better remember it and I come back to you. Where were we? Here, the examples. There's one more here. So I've shown that if I have this space space observable with a sharp position marginal, then I get this limiting case of the uncertainty principle that one distance is zero and the other one is infinite. So that's how it should turn out to be the case if it's at all true. And it's in line with Werner's uncertainty relation anyway, which, as it happens, excludes that case because, well, this turns out only that becomes clear in the course of the proof that you have to assume from the outset, for proving Werner's uncertainty relation, you have to assume from the outset that your measures, distance, are finite. So you don't allow zero, it's between zero and infinity and strictly finite and non-zero. Then you can run this proof, and this example here shows that the limit case anyway is satisfied as well. But here, example four, take position and take a bounded function of position. Then we can compute the Werner distance, and it turns out to be infinite again. One might think that in some cases, distance, the function of q, is actually giving a fairly good estimate of position. So Werner's measure in any case tells us that there is something like a big difference between those. Whether that is good or bad, I don't want to discuss too much here.
But you took a supremum over all the row or something like that. So
yes, that's
there must be some row that'll mess up the.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, because it can run far out, and that's how the proof works. You can have distributions just move out to infinity, and that's not reflected by a finite, by bounded observable. Something like that. Well, yeah. So here's my rather new attempt, and I can only just try to go over the definition and then state what I believe I have as a result here. So we need some terms here. The state row is called the localized in a position interval. If its position distribution vanishes outside that interval, and similarly for momentum, of course. Here is the definition of epsilon delta approximation of an observable of position by means of an observable M1 on the real line. This stipulates that for given epsilon between 0 and 1 and delta positive, we find always a positive number which is finite, so that for all these intervals running across the real line and all states that are initially localized in I of q delta, the distribution of the M1 observable is almost localized in some related interval, which might have a different width, but we choose to learn it to have it centered at the same place. So the idea with this is that whatever localized input statistics we throw in, the localized position input statistics, that's the idea of what one does in calibration. You throw in a localized state, and you want to see that your distribution doesn't deviate too far from it. And what I require here is an overall, across the whole real line, an overall maximum width that I have to allow, which is not going to infinity. So that's my input here. Then one can look at these numbers W, which give an upper bound for the width that I have to allow for the probability to be close to 1. Then I can take overall, can take the infimum of all those W, and I get what I call the inaccuracy. And then I let delta vary across all possible values and take the infimum of that. That is giving me what one might call the resolution of this approximation of M of Q in terms of M1. So these are the error measures which come out rather naturally if you think in terms of error bars. Then that's what you play with and try to optimize. But actually also looking at worst case scenarios in this definition. And then the proposal is to accept M1 as representing an approximate measurement of Q or an approximation to Q. If M1 has finite accuracies, and we also say that such an approximation has finite resolution if the resolution term is positive for all epsilon. So that's my notion of approximate measurement in terms of error bars, as it were, to have a sort of handy shorthand to describe it. But spelled this out here then for a phase space observable, these properties again for position and momentum spelled out, so I don't have to go over that again. We need a definition of approximate joint observable, QNP, that's any phase space observable which has finite accuracies. And within that class, one can look at singling out, again, the case where one measurement is sharp. Let's say M1 is the sharp position. What we get in this case is that the inaccuracy is actually equal to delta, and then the infimum of that is actually zero. So that characterizes the sharp case. So it's true also the reverse, that if M1 is an approximation to Q, such that the inaccuracy is always equal to delta, then it follows that M1 is equal to Q. So that goes back and forth. Here's an analog of example 3. If we take a faceless observable whose one marginal is sharp, so it's a perfect approximation, then the other one is no approximation at all. So this faceless observable is not, in my sense, an approximation to an approximate joint measurement of position and momentum. So that's the statement here. If I have a faceless observable with first marginal coinciding with sharp position, then the second marginal cannot be an epsilon delta approximation to P for any epsilon delta. And that means that the inaccuracy is infinite. So M cannot be an approximate joint observable to Q and P. And the proof is written up there. Here's then what I hope I've proven correctly. I still have to type it up, but I won't show you that, it's not in here. Given that a phase-space observable M is an approximate joint observable for Q and P, so it satisfies those finite error bar conditions, then with this constraint on epsilon to be positive and below a half, I want to go with the probability at least above a half, 1 minus epsilon is greater than a half. The inaccuracies and resolutions of M1 and M2 satisfy this uncertainty relation. The inaccuracy product, each term is greater than the corresponding resolution term by definition, and these satisfy that uncertainty relation with a universal lower bound only depending on the confidence level. So this would then generalize the uncertain relation that we have for the phase-based, covariant phase-based case. And the proof follows closely Werner's proof for his distance measure, in that one constructs from such an M, a covariant M, whose error measures are not greater than those of M. And then one estimates for the covariant phase space case, what our error measures are, and they turn out to be exactly what we started with in the section on covariant phase space observables. So the proof really goes like that. Replace M with a covariant phase space observable whose error measures are below here, so the uncertainty product is below here. And show, then we can use an uncertainty relation that I already showed you to get this lower bound. That's the proof strategy, and the devil is in the detail that I can't possibly show you here. Should wrap it up then, I guess. How do I do this? Some concluding comments on how this all comes neatly together here. There's one final comment that I want to emphasize. I've talked about the joint measurement of certain relation, but I also described a sequence of first position, then momentum, or the other way around, measurements as a joint measurement. But this scenario can be used to quantify the measure of the level of disturbance that is introduced by the position measurement. And that is just described by the inaccuracy that is forced on the second momentum measurement, following the position measurement. So I'd like to keep up this distinction between the joint measurement that's in relation to position and momentum, which is in terms of measurement and accuracies. And I've used that, following Werner, to also argue for an accuracy versus disturbance uncertainty relation, which just comes as a consequence of this. And what I just a moment ago said in words, I've reduced the joint measurement inaccuracy product to the product of variances in the state M that generates the phase space observable. So what I'm saying is there's a closed loop here, finally. First, we had the standard uncertainty relation for preparations of position and momentum. Now it turns out this formally can be used in a proof of the joint measurement uncertainty relation, which itself gives rise to an accuracy versus disturbance uncertainty relation. So mathematically, all these have the same core within quantum mechanics, although conceptually they are quite distinct, but have finally been made precise. So I hope I'm not utterly too late. Thank you very much.
Thank you. In terms of generalizing to relativistic things, this is all entirely in Galileo.
This is, yeah, but I would expect there is a broad literature that is well established to construct a phase space observables on relativistic phase space. But that's only the covariant case. But I would expect the mathematics is pretty similar, that one can follow similar recipes to get to such statement as well. But, yeah, ought to be done.
What about other cases, like different components of the angular momentum or, you know, other situations?
Well, as I said, this is just one case study. The most, perhaps, prominent case, which one wants to understand or should understand first. And there have been these doubts whether the joint measurement uncertainty relation is universal or not. As we saw with the classical errors, it doesn't look like it for a while. And there are other attacks against it, so it's quite reassuring to have that all wrapped up and clarified. Mostly, I want to emphasize, mostly really thanks to the work of Werner 2 years ago, plus the work that really identifies the unique form of covariant phase space observables. Werner's recent contribution really was to show how you can go from what is an arbitrary phase space observable and go over to a covariant one, which is no worse than that one. So then you can use all the knowledge you have about covariant observables. So that was a beautiful observation.
What about higher dimensions? I mean, is that true?
Oh, yeah. I haven't bothered really to write it in greater generality of what I did here, but Werner has it for arbitrary dimensions and particle systems with spin, if you like, and this all goes through equally well. The lower bounds, the constant that Werner has, he has this df, let's say m1 cubed, df m2 cubed, is greater equal c h bar. C turns out to be 0.30147 h bar. It's not your favorite 1/2 here. But that's because, what is his measure? The DFMQ, M1Q, for instance, is given as the average of Q, and Q of this M is the generating operator density from the phase space observable, and this is m superscript q is its position distribution, and you take the average of mod q. You could go to a, yeah, now I see I gave you a wrong definition there, but I can't recall the correct one. There's a discussion of this case too, but this is linked here. One can vary the definition, go away from the monometric and take some different class of functions, h, than those that I took for the supremum, and you get to a more quadratic measure, and then you're back to your factor of a half. So there's a bit of discretion with this constant. It depends on the type of system, although for higher springs, for instance, it tends to increase above this value. So there are some interesting observations in Werner's paper that's worth looking up.
This is just a comment. See what maybe you agree with it. So in the older way of doing it, you would have looked for an operator to represent a single operator to represent a measurement. And now you're representing it more generally as this projected positive operator value measure. So I guess it's that extra generality that allows you to include the case of a sequence of measurements within a single measurement. That's how you could reiterate this, what you call this preparation form of the uncertainty principle, the disturbance form of the uncertainty principle.
And also that's what is required in order to come up with a reasonable phase space probability to begin with. You can't do it without positive operator measures which are not projection valued.
I mean, the nice thing here is that the amalgamation of the two forms of the uncertainty principle into one form. That rests crucially on this DOV.
This was emerging since we knew about those covariant phase-based observables. It really was staring in the face there that the whole construction is linking up with what we know about state operators. So all uncertainty relations that you can have for states, quantum states, and their separate position and momentum distributions, you can immediately use to provide information about inaccuracy measures of your phase-based observables.
Okay. Are there any further questions?
As I said, I'll be around
to see you around. Well, thank you, speaker, one last time.